we saw Salanta, and he told him that he was too nervous to remain in the field of Shechita because it's such a responsibility, and if you just make one little mistake, so all of the meat that you're giving all the people to eat is not kosher, and he didn't feel that he could continue to have that responsibility on his head. And he told Rabbi Sol Salanta he was thinking of leaving and going into business. So Sol Salanta almost fainted, so he said, what are you talking about? Going into business, it's much more difficult to be careful there on every step of the way, on every inch of the way. There are problems, there are isurim, and there are violations and so on. People don't realize how serious the isurim are that are often violated by people in business. The Aseres HaDibros, one of the Aseres HaDibros we read is the Din of Leisig Noivu. The Gemara, of course, interprets that based on the context of the other psukim in the Aseres HaDibros, this is speaking about kidnapping. It's referring to Gnevas Nefashas because it's written in the middle of other violations where the punishment is an Einish Misa, a penalty of death, but the Pasuk also is referring to stealing. One is not permitted to steal. And it's for this reason the Mefarsh Ma'achumish explained that right after the Aseres HaDibros appears in the Chumash in Parshas Yisro, the very next Sedra is Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah spells out who is entitled to which money. Whoever is entitled to the money is the one who is the Bailim, and others are not permitted to take it away. The whole Parshas Mishpatim is sort of an interpretation and a pirush on the pasuk of Lois Ignoivu. Who is in violation of Lois Ignoivu? One who takes away the moment from the one who has the right, one who has the schus to the moment. The violation of Gzela doesn't only apply in the simple situation where a person goes into the store and he walks off with the merchandise, or he sticks his hand into someone else's pocket and he steals the other person's money. The Torah has a violation of Gneiv in another form, one who owes debts and doesn't pay the chayvet, loy sashay. There is a special Easter if one doesn't pay his workers, an additional aver if he doesn't pay the poyalim, the workers who did the schiris poyalim for him. And there's a special Easter if the person doesn't pay the workers, b'yomatidin skor, you have to pay dafka on the day, whatever they agreed. Of course, the din, the Easter only applies if the boss has money to pay and he doesn't pay. If he doesn't have any money, so he's not in violation of the Easter. But still, the boss should engage workers only in such a way that he thinks in advance that he's going to be able to pay them. And if he thinks he won't be able to pay them on time, he should tell them in advance that he won't be able to pay them on time. Or if a person, let's say, plans to pay his debts, but he postpones payment, he takes his time and he postpones payment, and thereby he causes a hefset to the other party, to the other firm. So this is also a violation of Lois Asher. In the biographies of Abba Basim, and they write the way when he his yeshiva in Europe bought food and benches and everything that they needed and clothing for the Talmidim, he had no money to pay. So when he came to America to raise funds and went back to Europe, so the same day that he came back with the money, he paid up all the Bali Chayvus. He didn't want to wait overnight. He said, the people told me he went to pay the baker and the butcher and so on. So the people were surprised. Why did he come? He just came back from America that day. He could have waited another few days. So he said, no. As long as he was in Europe and he had no money, he was broke, so he wasn't obligated to pay back. He was buying on credit, and they understood. But as soon as he came back from America with the money, so he wanted to pay the chayv exactly on the first available opportunity. But what the din requires. The Gemara has a halacha of dina de machusa dina that the basic halacha of dina de machusa dina is that one is obligated to pay his taxes if the taxes are fair. In America, it's hard to pshetl today that the taxes are unfair because we have a democratic government and we elect all of the congressmen. And if we don't like the taxes, we can always elect someone else to Congress and see to it that they change the laws. So the fact that the laws are the way they are, obviously, is the consensus of the population. It's more fair, the country over here, the government is more fair than any other government in the history of the world. It's a pretty fair democracy. So it's very difficult to say that one doesn't have to pay his taxes in America because the tax laws are unfair. They're much, certainly more fair than any other country. So the din requires that a person should pay his taxes. If a person doesn't pay taxes, he's also a ganav. He's not a ganav. He didn't put his hand into Uncle Sam's pocket and walk off with the money. But if I owe money to the government that I don't pay, I'm a ganav. And strictly speaking, the din says that a ganav is pasul eidus. It's a pasuk in the chumash. So if a person doesn't pay his taxes, or if a person fills out his tax forms fraudulently and pays less taxes than he's supposed to, he should really be postulated. So that we would have a lot of people who would be postulated. We wouldn't, I don't know how, the din requires when you get married, you have to have two kosher witnesses under the chuppah. I don't know if we'd be able to find any two kosher witnesses anywhere. I remember I was once at a wedding of one of the boys in the yeshiva got married, and all of the kibbutzim were divided 50-50, everything down the line. So the Masada Kiddushin was of Shnei Kotla, because the boy had learned in our yeshiva, and then he went on to study in Lakewood yeshiva. So Rabbi Kotla, Zohar Baruch, was called up to be Masada Kiddushin. Then they called up Beidi Kiddushin, so they called up, you have to call up two kosher witnesses, so they called me up. They thought that I was honest. They called me up from the Chosin Sad, then they called up someone else from the Kalas Sad, Rabbi so-and-so. And I was standing under the chuppah, and the fellow didn't come up. And they're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. So Shnei Kotler had the cup of wine all filled up, and he's standing holding the cup of wine, standing waiting, waiting. So he started to talk to me and learning. He told me a long shtickle Torah under the chuppah, and the other fellow still didn't come up, and everybody's waiting. He didn't say anything. So they called out someone else. They called someone else. It's from the Kalas Sad, because it was their kibbutz. And the other person came up right away. After the wedding, one of the rabbanim from Yeshiva University told me that he was standing next to this other rabbi that they called up. And the week before, he was indicted for lunch program frauds in his Chassidish Yeshiva. He was indicted for fraudulent activities in his lunch program. And he knew he was postulated. He knew he was a guy, he was postulated. So when they called him up to be one of the Aden, so he didn't go up. So this other rabbi from Yeshiva University was nudging him. So he said, they just called you up. So he said, they can get another rank. There are other people around, they get another rank. That's very nice on his part. The din is that Itaki is postulated. So the din is that a person who's a ganef, one who fills out his tax form fraudulently, is postulated. The question is that everyone is going to be postulated. So many people cheat on income tax. So the Gemara has a din that if a person cheats, if a person steals a little bit of money, and he, Aretzachayim, talks it into himself that he's not doing an Aveira, it's not so bad, so although he is violating an Aveira, even though he is violating the sin of Gneva, he doesn't become postulatus because we consider this as if he did the Aveira B'Shegeg. If he says everybody does it, then it's not so bad, and it's this and it's that, so then we call that Moira Heta. So the person, although he is a Ganef, is postulatus. But if a person, let's say, cheats large sums of money, he defrauds the government of large sums of money, where you can't really say it's Moira Heta, but everybody does it. So therefore, so such a person not only is a ganef, he's even postulated. Many people fill out insurance forms falsely, companies, private people, and so on. This is also an act of ganeva. If you take money that you're not entitled to, if the company only wants to reimburse you for 80% or whatever, or 60%, and you fill out a form that the hefset was much greater, so they're going to pay you 80% of that greater amount, which is going to turn out to be 100% of your loss. So this is an outright act of gzeil. Whenever a person is entitled to certain moment on certain conditions or a percentage of a certain amount of money, and he takes more than he's entitled to, so that's outright gneiva. In the biographies of Rav Kook, they write that once he was taking care of a get in the Beis Din in Tel Aviv before he became the chief rabbi in Yerushalayim. So they were waiting, the husband and the wife and the sefer were there, and they were waiting for the two witnesses to come. You have to have two Edom who signed the get and who witnessed when the get is handed over. So they were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. The Edom didn't come, so they were waiting around 20-30 minutes. So the secretary, there was a religious man who was a secretary in the office of the Bezdin. So he said, what do you have to wait for other people? I'll serve as one of the Edom. So Rabbi Kook told him in a nice way that he's not really interested in having him serve as an Edom, even though he was a religious Jew with a beard and pace and everything. He said that as a policy, he never allows secretaries and officers to serve as witnesses, because he told him, you know, a secretary works in an office, he sometimes takes an envelope and he sometimes takes a stamp and he uses it for his own purpose, and that's an outright act of Gneva. So strictly speaking, the din is that such a person is koshulated because he's Moira Heter. To cheat a little bit here, a little bit there is an act of Gneva, but people are Moira Heter, so we consider that an Aveira done B'Shegik, so he doesn't become koshulated. But Rav Kook was Machran, that's he said he'd rather get someone that doesn't work in an office, someone that's self-employed, whom he felt was not a ganef at all. In this week's Sedra,
like
in what sense is statute of limitations?
How long do you become postulated?
Till the person does tshuva. Till the person does tshuva. In order to do tshuva on ganeva, the first step is you have to give back the money that you stole to each and every person whom you stole it from. And then you have to accept upon yourself never to steal again.
Again.
No, you become kosher latest right away. You don't need Yom Kippur. Yeah. And he doesn't have to accept the pine stuff not to steal again.
Give back the money. That's the question yes on the Rambam. Mm-hmm.
Don't know. In this week's Sedra, we read the way Yaakov Avinu is telling his wives how he worked faithfully for his father-in-law. And he describes he was a shepherd for his father-in-law. He was getting paid. So he says, Ha'yisi b'yom machalani chore v'kerach b'aloylo. And he worked with all of his efforts, aten yidaten, you know, ki b'chol kochi avarati es avichim, he worked for his boss, that was their father, with all of his kochet. So the Rambam quotes that pasuk based on the Gemara in the end of Bav Metzia. And the Rambam says, from this pasuk we derive the principle that a worker who is engaged by the boss is obligated to put all of his full efforts and energy into the job. It doesn't mean he has to become a nervous wreck working for the boss, putting in every single second, but he has to work normally at a normal pace, according to the best of his ability. And he shouldn't kind of look, the person who had the job before me was a half-wit, and I'm getting the same salary that he got, and he could only finish half the amount of work, one quarter the amount of work that I could finish. That's no kind of. If you have the ability at a normal pace to do 20 times as much work as the previous person, even though you're only getting paid the same as the other guy got paid, the halacha says that you have to put in the full koiches, the full effort and energy into the job. And the Gemara says the dinim of workers, that they're not allowed to keep on taking coffee breaks, and they're not allowed to keep on schmoozing with the other secretaries in the office or talking on the telephone, private conversations and so on. They're supposed to put all of their efforts and energies into doing the work for the boss. Of course, if a person is a secretary in an office or a worker and it's slow, there's nothing to do, so they're not mukhiyev just to sit there idly and wait till the telephone is going to ring. They can engage in a conversation, and then they can take a coffee break. If there's no work to be done, they can take a coffee break at that time. But as soon as there is some work to be done, so they're supposed to take care of the work. Not like very often you come to an office, and the secretaries are so busy with their own things, they don't have time to take care of the customers. I remember a couple of months ago, I had to switch an airplane. I had to go from Cleveland to Indianapolis. And so I had to get a plane in 5 minutes. So the girl at the ticket office was talking on the telephone to her boyfriend or something. I almost missed my plane because she had to carry on her conversation. She didn't have time to take care of the customers. So that's outright geneva. She's not taking care of. She has the right to talk on the telephone when she's not busy with the work, but when there's work to be done, so you have to do the work. The Medrash even says, the Mesillas Yesharim quotes the Medrash that says that the Frumah workers were so careful that when other people came to engage them in conversation, they wouldn't even answer good morning, how are you, and so on. They wouldn't even talk in the middle of the work because they were afraid that just engaging in conversation would prevent them from functioning to the best of their ability on doing the work, even though it was menial labor, even though they're just working on a farm and so on. They were afraid that talking, just carrying on a conversation would take away from their ability to work. And Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva where he was presented the following shaila. If a person feels unhappy about his salary, he feels that they're underpaying him. He agreed to work on a job, and he's working, but he feels that he's being underpaid. So he wants to come late and leave early, and call in sick whenever he wants to take care of personal things. Is that permissible or not? Because after all, he's doing work for which he deserves much more money. Even if let's say the boss agrees that he's really doing work that he deserves more for, but the boss says he doesn't have any money to give him an increase. So Rav Moshe says that's not permissible. That's geneva. He says you have a right to quit if you're unhappy about the salary. Game is on the head. Go get another job somewhere else. But if you agree to do the work at this salary, so you're mukhiv to work b'chol koychacha, and you're not permitted to call in sick if you're not really sick, just because you want to take care of personal things. You're not allowed to come late and leave early and so on. You have to come and do all the work. The Gemara says ad kedei kach that the chachamim didn't require of workers, when they daven, that they should repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. Normally the halacha says that when you daven Shacharis, you daven Mincha, the chazan has to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. They call the Chazoras Hashatz. So the Gemara says, as far as workers are concerned, they were never mistaken that they have to have Chazoras Hashatz because it's Bittul Zman. There's a fellow who lives in my neighborhood who had a taina. He said that he works in mid-Manhattan, and whenever he goes to all of the offices to daven Mincha in the afternoon, they always have Chazoras Hashatz, except when he goes to the OU office. That's the Orthodox Union. There they just have a Hechel Kedushin. So he doesn't understand. The Orthodox Union, for all the rabbis, why don't they have a Hechel Kedushin? Why don't they have a Chazaras Nashatz like it says in the Shulchan Aruch? So I told them that it says in Shulchan Aruch just to be versed, that the workers are supposed to spend every minute of the work doing the work. Mustama in the Orthodox Union, it takes so many coffee breaks, it takes they come so late, it leaves their work. They have to chutch put in a few minutes of work into for the boss, for the business. It's not so pashut. You can't always make a chazaras hashatz. The Gemara says when the workers eat lunch, so when they recite the Birchas HaMazon at the end of the meal, the halacha says that they don't have to recite the entire Birchas HaMazon. The Gemara says they recite the first bracha till Hazana Sakol, then the second and the third brachas they combine together, and the fourth bracha they don't say at all. Hatayba Meitiv, they don't say at all. They just then Boinav Rachma B'Yushalayim Amein, and that's in fact why we recite Amein out loud. The Gemara says, why do you say Amein out loud? That's a sign, that's a signal to the workers that as far as they're concerned, the benching is finished, they should go back to work. Because the bracha after that, Kehil Avinu Malkeinu Adireinu Bareinu Goaleinu, that's called Hatayba Meitiv, that's only Midirabbanan, it's not Min HaTorah. And the rabbis relieve the workers of reciting that bracha, because they're supposed to put in the full time working for the boss. Of course, in the Shulchan Aruch it says that today the workers, the bosses are not so makbid about this. So the proper thing is that the workers should recite the whole Birchas HaMazon and they should recite the Chazaras Hashat, but they should still be careful not to misuse this schut to take a coffee break and so on. Some people take a whole day. They study Daf Yomi on the job, and then they study Mishnah Yomis, and then they made Daven Mincha and Ma'ariv and Shachris and everything. It's very wonderful that they want to be so religious, but not on the boss's cheshbon. That's not why the boss is paying them. They have to put in the full time and the full koiches to do their work. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara that a malamed who's supposed to teach children is not allowed to stay up at night, late at night, because he's going to lose his voice. Or any worker is not permitted to take on another job at night because he's going to be tired in the daytime and he won't be able to put in his full effort and energy into his job. He'll do a poor job. The halacha says if you obligated yourself to work for a company, so it's understood that you're going to work when you're awake. You're not going to be half asleep. So you're not permitted to have another job at night.
Rabbi Semler, I heard about Semler. Somebody called him and he gave him the good news that he settled. He went to bankruptcy and settled at 25 cents on a dollar. He says, halachically, it's wrong. He doesn't say he plays with it totally if he can sell 25 cents on a dollar. How do you explain it? You say, dina gamalchus and dina, if that's the din of the land, then maybe it should be exceptional.
There's a big problem exactly how far we apply Dina de Malchusa. The basic application of Dina de Malchusa is that we are obligated to pay our taxes. Then there's another Dina of Dina de Malchusa that if the government instituted laws for the sake of protecting the society.
Chapter 11 or Chapter 7, whatever.
That's a shaila where the bankruptcy laws go on the Dina de Malchusa if all the parties involved are Jewish. If one of the parties involved is a non-Jew, so then Dina de Malchusa always applies. But if all the parties involved are Jewish, then it's a question whether Dina de Malchusa would apply. I think it still would apply, but it's still it's improper to go into bankruptcy if the person could have avoided it. If he has no braver, then when the judge passes in court that he's potter from paying the rest of the money, so the halacha says that he doesn't have to pay. But it's improper to use it unless it's absolutely necessary. That's outright geneva. That's outright geneva. Then he's not allowed to. Sure. Then he's not allowed to. The pasuk in Chumash speaks so seriously, so severely about hen tzedek, nefas tzedek, and so on, that we Jewish people are prohibited from making false weights and measures, or from possessing them, or from using them. Even if a person doesn't use this false weight or measure, he just has it around the house, he's already in violation of an issur. The Gemara says if you have it around the house, you have to smash it in order to make sure that the person doesn't use it. In the Chumash, in the end of Chumash Vayikra, we read about the laws of Ainoa. Ainoa applies in the following case. If I sell something and I fool the customer into believing that it's worth more than it really is, or if I buy something and I fool the merchant into believing that it's worth less than it really is, this is a common practice by religious and non-religious people alike, of all faiths, creeds, and religions. You know, so everybody violates this din. This is one of the dinim in the Torah. there are two dinim in Ainoa. There's an Isur in Ainoa, then there's a penalty. Not only is it an Aveira to cheat someone in business, to charge too much or to pay too little, either because the price is wrong or because the object that you're selling has some hidden mum, has some flaw in it, which you don't let the customer know about. You're not obligated to, when you sell a used car or when you sell some merchandise, you're not obligated to give a whole list of all of the chesroinus, all of the mumim that the merchandise has, but you're not permitted to cover it up and act as if it doesn't have these mumim. You have to make it, if it's understood that if it's a second-rate merchandise or it's a used car, so it's understood that it's going to have some chesroinus. But if you tell a customer this is a brand new car and it was really used, or let's say the car has 10,000 miles on it, and then you rig the meter to say 1,000 miles or 100 miles or something like that, so that's an Isur of Ainoa. You fool the customer into believing that it's a much better quality than it really is. That's an Isur of Ainoa. And even b'dieved, if you fool the person, there is a penalty of Ainoa. And many people work under the mistaken impression that the laws of Ainoa don't apply whenever the person who's getting cheated is a Nachri. And we have many Jews whom we treat as Nachrim. We have an Apikoiris, a Zinuk and Nachri, a person who's totally not religious, Zinuk and Nachri. And for business purposes, we can always declare that the other fellow is an Apikoiris, he's not religious, he's anti-religious, whatever. He opposes Medinas Yisrael, he's for Medinas Yisrael, whatever happens to serve our purposes on the occasion. So we can always declare that he's an Apikoiris for some good reason or another, and feel safe in assuming that we can cheat him in business. The halacha says that the whole thing is an eftigatog. It's not true. The din is that one is prohibited to cheat a nokri. The Gemara just says that the penalty of cheating, if a person steals from a nokri, it's an iser. Gzela from a nokri is an iser. Ainoa from a nokri is also an iser. The Gemara just says that when a person steals, it's a penalty. You have to sometimes pay back twice as much. You have to pay kefo. Or when a person cheats in business, sometimes he has to reimburse the other person how much he cheated him. There are penalties in Ainoa. So the penalties of paying kefil or the penalties of Ainoa don't apply whenever the person who is cheated is a non-Jew. That's the loshen, that's the expression that the Gemara uses. Le'achicha ata machzer Ainoa, v'yata machzer Ainoa le'nochri. The paying back, making good, the hefzer that you cheated the person, that penalty only applies if the person who is cheated was a Yisrael. If he's a nochri, so then there's no penalty to pay back. But the prohibition certainly does apply.
If somebody in business
if what happens, the person reneged on a
person orders something and delivers that is a reneged.
And you know for sure that he owes you the money.
Yeah. And he makes a price and then he divides it and the price for the money. And you still have ongoing business with him. Can you in fact add that loss into something else that you think they don't?
The Rav Dina Meshulchan Aruch about that. You have to ask each particular case, you have to ask a shayla. There are cases where you're permitted to do that. But you would have to ask a shayla on each particular case.
And supposing it's, supposing somebody intends to do something, and they, because of the ability or other circumstances, they fail to do what is the...
What do you mean a person intended to do what?
Well, they make a contract form, or they take on a commitment form. And they lost the material, or they got the material, and it cost you money.
I mean, I laid out the material and then the other fellow lost it.
Yeah.
Yeah, laws about that, when he's held responsible and whatnot. Yeah. Most of the time he'll be held responsible for whatever he lost.
I'm trying unintentionally.
Even unintentionally.
But your obligation to that person doesn't change on how you deal with it.
Well, sometimes he'll be held responsible for what he lost and he'll have to pay me. Now, if he doesn't pay me, so then there are rules and regulations how I'm allowed to get that money back from him if I know for sure that he owes me that money. If he can go to court and prove it, so that's the best way to do it. If he can't go to a dintar, if he can't prove it in court, so then there are dina m'shulchan aruch, when you're allowed to force the other fellow, how and when you're allowed to twist his arm to get your money back. There is a tshuva in the Sefer Mishkanes Yankiv where he describes a situation where a Jew sold a boat to a non-Jew, and he overcharged the non-Jew something terrible. And the non-Jew was furious, and he didn't pay yet for the boat. So he was furious. He said, "This is ridiculous. I'm not going to pay." So the Jew said, the guy said, "I'm going to go to court." So the Jew said, "But Jews are not allowed to go to court. We have to go to Din Torah," which is right away not a true statement. If you're dealing with a non-Jew, there's no avera to go to court. If there are two Jews, if all the parties involved are Jewish, then there's a prohibition to go to court. And even though the Talmud says the principle of dina and malchus adina, it doesn't cover this. It doesn't mean that when two Jews have a sichsuch between themselves that they're permitted to go to secular court. That's still prohibited. You have to go to a din Torah. Sometimes the Dayanim and the Din Torah will have to paskin according to the Din and the Machusa, and sometimes not. There are a lot of klolim in the Shulchan Aruch. When the Rabbanim, you're not permitted to go to court, you have to go to Rabbanim. It doesn't have to be Rabbanim, it can be other Talmidei Chachamim, or you can accept honest Fruma Balabatim also. You can have arbitration, fine. But sometimes the halacha will require that the Rabbanim who are paskin the case should follow the government laws, and sometimes not. So right away, this was a fraudulent statement. The Jew said, I'm prohibited to go to courts, I have to go to a din Torah. So the guy said, okay, I'll go to any rabbi that you want. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to pay twice as much as the boat is really worth. So they went to the local rabbi for a din Torah. And the rabbi paskin, there's no din avoyno for goy, since the Jew cheated the goy. So there's no din avoyno. So the guy almost hit the ceiling and said, this is ridiculous. Is there a higher rabbi? Is there someone, a bigger rabbi than this? So they said, yeah. So they send a letter, they sent a shada to the Mishkanus Yankee. So he paskin against the Jew. He said that the goy was right. The din that there's no enough for a goy means, doesn't mean you're permitted to cheat the nachri. The halacha says he's certainly prohibited. It's like zayla from a non-Jew. You're not permitted to steal from a non-Jew. It's a befeirish din. Chumash, naseres adibros. You're not allowed to cheat from a non-Jew either. It's the yetzahara that everybody has talks into us all kinds of heteros. Certainly prohibited. The halacha vaynor to a nachri only says, if you've already cheated the nachri, so then the nachri cannot force you to reimburse him the amount of money that he was cheated. But here, where the Nachri didn't pay yet for his boat, so he says, the guy has the right to say, I don't want to pay. And whoever forces him to pay, the rabbi, the bezin, who will force him to pay, they will be in violation of the Yisrael law, because they were cheating the guy that amount of money. It certainly is prohibited. Rabbanim who gave the psak on the din Torah will give him permission to go to court in order to enforce the collection. Yeah, that's the standard procedure, unfortunately. Unfortunately, people go to din Torah, then they don't want to abide by the psak. So the Rabbanim have to give permission to the one who won the din Torah to go to court in order to collect.
When does
Kuz
go? Kuz go?
Toi Sakamuta, yeah. Toi Sakamuta means, let's say in the following case, if I purchased something from a store and I gave them a $20 check and they gave me too much change, so the halacha says, strictly speaking, that I'm not obligated to give them back the change that the extra change that they gave me. This was a heter, the Gemara has this on the books, this din is written in Shulchan Aruch. This was a heter that was practiced by the Jews for many, many years, and the result of that was the Chmelnytsky pogroms. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Jews used to have bars. They used to have saloons where they would sell schnapps to the goyim, and the goyim would buy one drink, and then they would pay, and then they would get drunk, and then they would buy another drink, and then they'd be really drunk, and then they'd start to pay. They'd take out all the money, and they wouldn't know how much it was and how much they owed them, and they left all the money. And then a day or two later, when they would start to look for the rest of the money, they would realize that the Jews had cheated. They would try to figure out where did the money all go. So they would realize all of their money disappeared in the Jewish bars. After it took them quite a few years till they realized where the money was disappearing to, but after they finally discovered what was happening, so they killed out all the Jews in that part of Europe. So on the side of the Chayshim Mishpat in the Be'er HaGoyloh, he writes, Rav Moshe Ravkash, that's the great grandfather of the Vilna Gaon, writes in his commentary. He usually has no commentary, he just gives you the sources for all the dinim and the Shulchan Aruch. He writes that he doesn't recommend to anybody to follow that heter of Toras Sakim because he can get into big trouble, as we all got into trouble. He says that that's what all of the stories from the Goyim came from. It's even more than that. It's more than Masi Sa Yosher HaTov. It's Kiddush Hashem to give back the money. It's not an Issa to give back the money. they used to tell a story about Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, that he was a rav in a little community in Europe. And sometimes the Jews would go to the post office to buy stamps, and they would give the goyish worker in the post office the money, so he would give them too much change. So on several occasions, the Balabatim asked Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, what the din is? Do they have to give the worker in the post office back the extra change, or do they have the right to follow this din in the Gemara of Toi Sakamuta, since the Nachri made a mistake and give me too much change so you can keep it? So Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky said, of course they have to give back the extra change, what's the question? So then, when the Nazis came into his community and they were killing all the Jews, so that Goyish post office worker saved the lives of many Jews. He hid them. And later on he explained why, that he used to read the Nazi propaganda, and he read that the Jews are gazlonim and they're cheats and they're fakers and so on. And he wanted to see whether their propaganda was true or not true. So he would test out the Jews intentionally. It wasn't that he made a mistake. It wasn't the Torah stop. He was testing them. And he said that every time he gave too much change to the Jew would always come back within a few hours and give him back the extra change. So he was convinced that the Nazis were telling a lie, and that's why he saved the lives of many Jews. So he told this over to Rabbi Yanki Kamenetsky after he was already in America. They said, ooh, like a Chassidish Rebbe, Bal Moifis, he saved the lives of so many people. Look at the way he had a Ruach HaKodesh to understand how important it was to give back the nickel, the quarter, whatever it was. So he said, it wasn't Ruach HaKodesh, just plain common sense. If you got too much money, so of course you have to give back the extra change, but you have to have Azam, Machshava with a whole Ruach HaKodesh. He said, anyone with a straight head would say you have to give back the change. What was so deep about that? What happens if a person has a job and the boss tells him, you have to fill out the income tax reports and you have to write this down as an expense, not as a salary, and you have to write that down as a this, and you have to do this, and you have to doctor up all of the papers. You have to sell this merchandise to the customer. Don't tell him it has all of these restraints. You have to charge more than it's worth and so on. And he understands that if he doesn't listen to the boss, he's going to lose his job. So what's the din? So the din is obvious what the din is, that you have to give up your job. You should quit before they fire you. You're not permitted to do such a thing. To cheat in business in order not to lose your partner. It's prohibited. A person is obligated to keep all the mitzvahs HaTorah. So what if it's going to... How much mesiras nefesh does a person have to display in order to keep the laws of the Torah? So the Gemara says there are different madregas. If his life is in danger, so then he's permitted to be Mechal Shabbos, or he's permitted to eat on Yom Kippur, and so on. If his life is in danger, the only three mitzvahs that he has to be observant, the only three mitzvahs he has to be careful about are Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos and Shefach HaDam. What if it's not what if the situation is not so severe? So let's say a person has to put on tefillin. What if by putting on tefillin, let's face it, he has an allergy or something, by putting on tefillin today, he's going to break out, he's going to get sick, he's going to throw up, whatever, he has an allergy to leather. Or a person is allergic to wheat, he's going to eat matzah, he's going to be sick for 3 months. Is he obligated to eat matzah or not? What's the law? So the din says that when it comes to a mitzvah saseh, we distinguish between three categories, a mitzvah saseh and a mitzvah loy saseh. In these three averis, when it comes to a mitzvah saseh, putting on tefillin, davening, sitting in sukkah, and so on, so a person is obligated to keep all the mitzvahs. But if he's going to get extremely sick from it, so then he's not mechuyev. Or if it's going to cost him so much money, he'll have to spend more than one-fifth of his total savings. So the halacha says that you're not mechuyev to do that, and that's Taka learned that from this week's seder, that it says in the pasuk, Yankov Avinu says, Kol asher titen li, aser asrenu lach, he will give one-tenth and he will give another tenth. The Gemara says, you add up one-tenth and another tenth, is one-fifth. So we see that a person is mechuyev to give away up until one-fifth of his total savings to keep mitzvahs HaTorah. But he's not obligated to give up more than one-fifth. Let's say the fellow's in Hawaii one day and he doesn't have tefillin. So the only way to get tefillin is to buy a ticket today to go to Alaska, or to go to San Francisco, whatever, to go, some of there are Jews over there somewhere, Tokyo, I don't know. whatever is close, I'm not familiar there. So, but he's going to have to spend so much money in order to collect tefillin. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, he's not mechuyev to spend more than one-fifth of his total savings in order to keep any of the mitzvahs HaTorah. That's a hain rav. Or hu'ad dinami, the person is not obligated to go get sick in order to keep mitzvahs HaTorah. But what if it's an issue of an aveira, like being mechal Shabbos or kashrus or something like that? If it's an issue of an aveira, so then he's obligated to keep the laws of the Torah, even if he has to spend his last penny, even if he has to lose his job, even if he has to get a little bit sick. He's not obligated to observe the laws of the Torah if his life is in danger. If there's a suffix sakana, adik dekach, he's not mechuyev to. But to lose his job, he is mechuyev to. That's the din. So if he's stuck in a situation where the only way he can keep his job is by cheating on all the customers or cheating the government on income tax, whatever, so the din says that he's not permitted to.
Capital in order to stay in business, and so your credit is you're acting the way you are not like that. We're acting the way that is compromising.
Mm.
But now, if you just obey the din and you stop doing that, then not only would you'll do the business, which is you make sure that that's fine. But there are other people dependent on you. You're not doing that.
Mm.
How do you handle that?
I don't know. You have to sit down with your local Orthodox rabbi and work it out. For sure, no. You have to listen to all the details and hear the whole shaila. It's not a regular. Okay. Sometimes a din will require to close down the whole business and fracking. Sometimes not. Sometimes if you can pay everything out, if you think you'll be able to pay everything out in the end, so you wait till late. There will be different cases. We'll have a different fact. We have additional forms of gneiva that people usually don't even think of. The Gemara has a din that of Oni Hamhapich Bahararo or Boacher Natolo Nikra Gazlon. That means if you have a person is applying for a job and he's almost clinched the job, he's already worked out all the details and so on. Or let's say a businessman has completed a deal or almost completed a deal with a certain firm to deliver something for them. And he gave him a rate, the price, and so on. And then someone else comes and he grabs this job for me. Kapsoys. I was just about to get this job. Someone else kapsoys the job. Someone else applies for the job that I have. Or let's say someone else comes to this firm and he says, oh, they're selling you stationery for so much, I'll sell you for a penny less. Or they're selling you metal for so much, I'll sell you for a penny less on an ounce or whatever it is. So the Gemara says that that's an act of gzela. Why is it an act of gzela? Because since the other fellow was almost about to clinch the deal, or he already did clinch the deal, even though you can always back out later on if you change your mind, but since he's holding by clinching the deal, so it's considered as if that belongs to him. So if someone else grabs it from him, that's an isur gzela. Remember, I used to have a chavrusa with three balabatim every Sunday night. These balabatim didn't enjoy going to all the dinners. So there was always a dinner for a Shari Tzedek and for this yeshiva and that yeshiva and the shuls and this and that. So they wanted to become part of all of them. Someone just wanted to send in their checks, and they said they're busy, they have a chavrus, they have a saint. We used to learn together every Sunday night. So two of them were businessmen and one was a doctor. So when we learned this Gemara, so the two businessmen said, Rabbi, what are you talking about? We do that all the time. What do you mean? Even after they've already made the deal, they've already signed an agreement. That's common practice that the other businessmen will come and offer the firm the same thing for slightly less, and they'll chapoys the business from the first one. The doctor understood that it's awesome. So he wasn't used to doing this. So the Gemara said that it's awesome, so it's not yoshidik, you're not allowed. But the people in business apparently are so used to this that it couldn't even be masik that this should be an issur. The halacha says, however, you always have to determine who has the schus on what. See, in this case, if the worker is about to clinch getting a job, or if a worker already has a job, let's say somebody comes to Dr. Lim and he offers his services to do the same job that I'm doing for less. So that's the case. If Dr. Lim is unhappy with the way I'm functioning and he wants to get rid of me anyway, and he's asking around, will anybody else apply for the job and some apply? Okay? So that's permissible. But if I'm functioning decently and he's satisfied, and the other guy comes and he offers to do the same job but better for less money, so that's an Isra Bani Hamahapech Bacharora. Why? Because we consider it as if the worker is muhsik on the job. The worker has the bailus on the job. We don't consider it the reverse, that the boss has the bailus on the workers. Let's say one institution pirates a worker from another institution, like universities, always pirate or companies. Professors or workers. Right. So the halacha says that the boss is not considered a bailim on the workers. We usually think everything the reverse. We usually think as if the boss engages the worker and he owns him and he pays him and so on. The halacha says everything just the reverse. The worker is considered a muhsik on the job. As if the job belongs to the worker, no one else is allowed to chaperos from him. But the workers don't belong to the boss in any sense at all. And anyone else has the right to pirate a worker from my company, and there's no issue there at all. That's not a violation of Ani Hamahapech Bacharor. There's another din. There's another halacha that if a worker chooses to, he can always quit in the middle of the time, even though he agreed to work for a year or for 3 years, whatever. He can always quit in the middle, provided that he doesn't cause a hefsid to the company.
How does it differ from a business deal? How I mean, he agreed that he will work for so much, and then somebody gives him more, he quits. I mean, it's not any worse than somebody has a business and offers more and he cheats him out.
Oh, so that's a good question. So the Gemara distinguishes as follows. It depends. If you promise to deliver something, to sell something or to buy, that's one thing. But if you promise to work, so then if a person promises, obligates himself to work for someone else, in a certain sense he's like a slave, he's like an eved. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Bnei Yisrael HaSinai, Kili Bnei Yisrael Avodim. V'lo Avodim L'Avodim. He doesn't want the Jewish people to be slaves anymore. We were slaves in Egypt to Paro, and then V'yotzeinu Mitoicham L'Cheiru Soilom. When we dav Marv, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt to remain free people for the rest of our history. L'Cheiru Soilom, never again to be slaves. So because of that statement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said at Har Sinai, the Gemara says that it's improper for anyone to sell himself as an Eved Ivri. Even though the Torah has rules and regulations, sometimes a person can sell himself, but he's not really allowed to. Only if Mamish is broken, he doesn't have any parnasa, then Bekoshi Godli is allowed to. And although the Halacha doesn't require that everyone should be self-employed, a person is permitted to work for someone else, so the question isn't that also an act of slavery? When you work for someone else, you're a slave for him, so the Halacha says no. We always allow the worker to quit in the middle of the job. So therefore, he's never considered a slave. If he were really a slave, he wouldn't be able to quit in the middle. There is a question in the Shulchan Aruch, what if the worker signed a contract with the boss? Do we still allow him to quit in the middle? So the Shulchan Aruch says if he signed a contract, or if he made a kinyan, then once he made a kinyan, a binding kinyan, he's not permitted to quit in the middle of the job. And others say that it's not so. The Shach passes that it's not so. That the even kinyanim and contracts are not binding on this. If the person chooses to quit in the middle, he's permitted to, provided, of course. A lot of times what you have is a person quits in the middle. If he's angry at the boss, and the boss suffers a tremendous hefset, because it's tax season, or they have to produce something, and because he quits, and he doesn't give him enough advance warning, so the company suffers a hefset. So that's clearly prohibited. The Mishnah says beferish that if the worker quit without enough advance warning, and he thereby caused the hefset to the boss. So there's an Isra of Adama Masik over here, and sometimes Taisa says he could even collect. Sometimes the boss can make the worker pay for the hefset moment that he incurred by just quitting, by not doing anything. Not only do you make a person pay for hefset that he caused by kumvi asay, by an act of hezek, by damaging, even just by quitting and not showing up to the office, sometimes we will hold the worker responsible to pay for that. Taisa has a whole discussion of when he'll be responsible. The boss does not have a chazaka on the worker.
Now, what happens if it's a type of job or a type of business where the capital of this creates, let's say, a custom or certain skills with technology, knowledge, and so forth? But when the worker isn't there, if he walks out, he takes it with him, it's a hezek to the business.
Why is it a hezek?
Well, let's say
they develop this technique.
Because of the capital of business, they get customer lists and other marketing knowledge. He walks out, he transfers somewhere else, and brings that with him. It's a hazard to the business. Or let's say it's R&D type of area.
Customer certainly.
So he's working on that. He walks out with that knowledge and tries to take it somewhere else. He's worked somewhere else more, but it was based on the capital and the input that he received for the job that he went there. They gave him a job and this and that, but it was because of the chemicals and the capital and the knowledge that the business had that he developed it further.
Mm-hmm.
But when he walks out, he's taking the capital that he developed for that business. What happens then?
That's a serious shayla. The customer list for sure belongs to the company. That's what we call in Yiddish Hasagas Gvul. Hasagas Gvul in the Chumash means that two people have fields, one next to the other, and one person moves over the fence in such a way that he has a bigger field. He just stole part of the other person's real estate. And in Yiddish, in the Shulchan Aruch, they refer to Hasagas Gvul as something else, when Achapoy is the customers for someone else. What do you mean Achapoy is someone else's customers? The person owns the customers. How does he own the customers? What do you mean? If someone has a store, I can't open up another store in competition with the first store. That's not called Masik Gvul. The only time it's called Masik Gvul is if it's clear that I'm going to put him out of business. I'm going to put him out of business. But if it's just the competition, so instead of making $150,000 a year, so I'll make $70,000 a year. The boss is, that's not a nisar of Hasagas Gvul. But the real Hasagas Gvul is this kind of a thing. If, let's say, customers, that's how the Or HaShulchan describes in the Chosh HaMishpat, let's say the customers are in my grocery shop. He describes a grocery store. The customers are shopping in my clothing store or my grocery shop or whatever, And then the other fellow from down the block comes in and he says, why do you go shopping over here? Why don't you come to me? Everything is much less. But since the customer is about to purchase something in this store, it's considered as if this sale already belongs to this store. So who are denying this kind of a case? Let's say if a certain company has a list of business contacts that they've worked out over the years, and then one of the workers is going to go give the whole list to the competition. He's going to open up his own business and contact all of those customers and offer them the same merchandise for half a penny less. So of course they're going to go to him. So that's clearly and he said Hasagas Gul. But it's clear that those customers belong to the first company. That's very clear that that's prohibited. The second case that you described is the fact that the worker is now better equipped, he can function better because they trained him on the first job.
Well, it's even more than that. I mean, he may have developed certain specialized knowledge and skill of this business functions in. And when he walks out, he takes that with him because he was working in this day.
So this causes a hepsis to the first company? Or
I mean, may have been high technology or something very specialized. He just can't replace immediately.
So then he's not allowed to quit before he gives them enough advance warning. Yeah, that's the deal. Whenever he's going to cause hepsis to the company, he's not permitted to quit. That's an Issa Masik.
It seems to me you're saying that Masik Hul is the
The Hasagas Gul that it says is prohibited is either if I'm going to open a store in competition and ruin his business completely to the point that it's not going to pay for him anymore. He's going to have to close down. He just won't make a living. Or the other kind of Hasagas Gul is if I take away the customers that were clearly holding by buying by him. That's an Isar Hasagas Gul. Let's say he has a list of clients who always work. He always deals with them. No one else would ever have those clients. So to take away those clients, that's a Hasagas Gul. Or just to open up the same business across the street and say, whoever wants should come to me, and it's in such a way that I won't put him out of business. He'll just make less business. I'll make a living and he'll make a living. That's not an Issa Hasagas Gul. Right, but the only time Hasagas Gul is prohibited to open up another store is if we can tell, it looks pretty certain in advance that it's going to be ruinous competition. But if it won't be ruinous competition, he'll just make a little less. You think that he may make a little less. So then there's no Issa Hasagas Gul. It's a little bit damaging. It depends how much damage you think it will cause. That's not hezek. That's free competition. That's your lot of it. What often happens in takeout places, let's say, the Rabbonim give a hashgacha on a certain restaurant. And then another person wants to open a restaurant right across the street, right next to the first one. So the first guy is so scared, Hasagas Gul is going to put him out of business. What often happens is that they both have more business than they ever had before. So it's like, yeah, you have two restaurants, so you have twice as many people eat out.
Jonah phrased the question about the employee meeting with the customer. My question is about the obligation of the employer, where let's say that they might have financial recourse against this employee, through means that he might not ordinarily do, like stopping a check or not paying the last week's salary. What I'm trying to understand is what is the commitment upon the employer or the person wrong where there is financial recourse available, and if it is financial recourse that might not ordinarily another bill, the same.
Right, sometimes we allow that. You have to ask right. Sometimes we would allow you to hold back the check for damages that even though the damage was a hezek al yidei grumme by not coming to the office or something, but grumme, tfisa will help. If I'm holding on to the check, I just cancel the check. So then tfisa helps in that. They were dinim and shulchan aruch about that. In Europe, they instituted a practice in the yeshivas to teach children Bava Kamma when they first started to study Gemara. And the reason for this officially was in order to ingrain in the children a respect for other people's property. They study Bava Kamma that if my behemoth causes a hezek to someone else, my cat drinks your milk, or my dog eats up your flesh, so I have to pay. So certainly if I cause a hezek, and certainly it's prohibited to cause a hezek. Somehow in America it doesn't work. We teach Bava Kamma, and as we're teaching the student Bava Kamma in yeshiva, they're breaking the blackboards and they're ripping someone else's bookcase and so on. So it must be a chisorim with the rabbeim. I guess the rabbeim are supposed to explain why we're teaching Bava Kamma. You have to teach it in such a way that the message should come across to the students. We have to explain to them that the seriousness of respecting other people's property.
It is not uncommon in a business that depends on shared knowledge with employees that when one gets a new employee, they will sign a non-compete agreement. And after 10 or 20 years, this person can become a major asset to the company. Very often he will then want to leave and start his own company. And he will say, how can I be asked to stand behind and honor that non-compete agreement? This is all I know. If I'm not allowed to be a stockbroker, if I'm not allowed to be a chemist, according to the type of chemist that I've been with you over the past 20 years, I can't eat. You can't expect me to become an opera singer. But in a case like that, is the employer allowed to enforce a non-compete agreement?
I guess you'd have to study.
I can understand that when you talk about service business, but when you talk about the product business, where you have worked as a chemist in the Coca-Cola company, you may not be allowed to share the Coca-Cola formula, but you certainly, if you're not going to work for another soda pop company, what can you do?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. these shadows are very. We have to work on all these shadows. Yeah. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos that when people die and they go to the heavenly court to be judged, so the very first question, the Gemara gives you the first six questions that you're asked. The Gemara says the first question that they ask in heaven is whether Nasasam and Asato Bemuna, whether the person dealt in business honestly. And the Pasuk in Navi speaks about people who earn money improperly. Osa Osher Veloy Mishpat, a person who makes a lot of money improperly, B'chatzi Yom Av Yazvenu. He will lose the fortunes when he's reached the half of the age that he should have lived. And there are two ways to understand why he's going to lose the riches in half of his lifetime. Either he's going to die at the age of 35, or he's going to become a poor man at the age of 35. But whatever it is, the Pasuk is telling us a terrible curse. And even if we see that many times the curse is not fulfilled, see a lot of people who cheat everybody in business and they live on to many, many, to a ripe old age. Look, we have a lot of kashas that we have, Tzadik Gerala, Rosh HaVetavla. But the official punishment for cheating in business, according to the words of the Navi, is that a person will lose all of these riches, B'chatzi Yom Av Yazvenu. The Gemara stresses so much the importance of being honest in business deals. The Gemara comments on the pasuk that we mentioned earlier, Hein Tzedek, Hin Tzedek. The pasuk speaks about having weights and measures that are honest, that are not the weights are not too big and they're not too small. So the Gemara has a play on words on the pasuk. The Gemara says you have to have a Hein Tzedek. If a person promises to deliver some goods, if he says yes or he says no, he has to keep his word in business, even if he didn't write any contract. Some people don't even honor their contract. And other people will only honor a contract that they signed, but if they made an oral agreement, they won't honor that. So the Gemara says that that's not proper. The halacha requires that a person has to keep his word in business. Let's say someone wants to know if I plan to go into a certain field, because if I'm going to go into that field, he doesn't want to go into competition with me. He doesn't stand the chance. He knows that I'll do a better job than he does. So I tell him, no, I'm not going to work on that phrase. Am I going to write a book on a certain theme or not? He's afraid if I'll write a book, he doesn't stand a chance of selling his book. I say, no, I'm not going to work on the book. And this guy sits and he writes a book for 25 years. And then I hear that he's writing. And the last year I sit in 2 months, I write up a book that's going to sell better than his book. And now he wasted 25 years of his life. So there's a halacha of hein tzedek and lach tzedek. If I promise the person I'm going to get to business, I promise the person I am going to do something, I promise the person I'm not going to do something, and it's negel lemaisa to the other party, and he's going to act accordingly based on my promise that yes or no, so I'm not permitted to go back on my promise. The Gemara even has a further step. The Gemara speaks about, in the end of Maseches Makos, the Gemara speaks about Rav Safra, who was such a chassid that he was doiver emes bilvavoy, that he followed, he was very honest, he was even honest in his heart. He never told a lie in his heart. What does that mean? He never told a lie in his heart. So the Gemara tells a story that one day he was selling some goods, he was selling some merchandise, and one day a man came over and he wanted to purchase something that he had for sale. So he said, if I give you $5, will you sell this to me? So Rav Safra was in the middle of saying Kriyat Shema. So he didn't answer. He just kept on davening. So the merchant, the customer thought that $5 wasn't enough. So he said, give you $10. He didn't finish yet. And by the time he finished davening, so the customer had offered much more money. So Rav Safra said, when he finally finished saying Krishma, whatever it was that he was davening, Barnafashas Tavas, so he said at the end, no, I'm going to give it to you for $5. Because when you offered me, when you said that you'll give $5, I wasn't really mechaven so much on the Krishma. I was saying the Krishma, but I was listening to your offer, and I made up my mind in my heart that I'm going to give it to you for $5, and I'm not allowed to charge you more. That's Geneva. If I take more than $5, I'll be an act of Geneva. This is a very common shaila that comes up. This is not a din, but this is called the Midas Chasidus. And in Shulchan Aruch, they recommend that a person should follow this Midas Chasidus, whether the other party involved is a Jew or a non-Jew. It doesn't make any difference. If you take more, if you made up your mind in your heart that you're going to settle for so much in negotiations with the other party, you agreed to settle. The other person doesn't even realize that you agreed to this in your heart. But if you made up your mind, you will agree to a certain price, and then later on he offers more. So the Midas Chasidus requires that the person should turn it down. Sometimes this is involves a large sum of money. Sometimes, let's say, one fellow from the yeshiva told me that he had purchased his apartment and his building. It was a co-op. And then when his wife had a child or two, so they had to move to a larger apartment, so he had to sell his first apartment. So he had different people come to see the apartment. So one person came, the other person came. Everyone was offering a different amount of money. And he never told them, of course, he had a mind to give it to the one who's going to give the highest offer. So one person gave the highest offer, and he made up his mind, that's it, he's going to sell it to that person, and he's not going to bother to wait any longer for anyone else. It doesn't pay, he's not going to waste any more time. And then the very next day, someone else came and offered him even $25,000 more than the last offer. So he asked around many different rabbanim what the din is. So he asked about 10 rabbanim. So 8 out of the 10 rabbanim told him there's no Easter, it's hetter gomer, it's mutter, there's nothing wrong. And because 2 rabbanim told him that they think that you're not allowed to, as this midas chasidus, so he did. He decided to forgo his $25,000 profit on the apartment. That's talk with the Gemara goes. Zayver emes bovava. Many people in business work with the assumption that the ends justify the means. That for the sake of supporting charity, or for the sake of supporting a yeshiva, for the sake of Medina Yisrael, whatever some great cause is, you can cheat all you want in business in order to make more money, in order to have more money to give to charity. So needless to say, this is not correct. The halacha says that if you have a lulav hagozel, stolen lulav, so the din is that you're not yetzer the mitzvah, and that's what we call a mitzvah haboa b'avera. If the person does an avera that enables him to do a mitzvah, so the avera blipped an avera, and the mitzvah is nishki mitzvah. And the pasuk says in the Navi, Ani Hashem soni gezel ba'oilo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I hate gzeila, even if the person is going to bring sacrifices at korban oilo to the Beis HaMikdash. He stole so much in order to bring korbanos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't do me any favors, don't steal, and don't give me any korbanos. And the Medrash gives a mashal amad avadayma that as you travel on the highway, so there are certain points where you have to pay tolls, you have to pay taxes to the government. And the Medrash gives a mashal that the king was traveling on the highway and he came to the toll, and the king doesn't have to pay the taxes, or he's the one who gets all the taxes. So when he came to the tax point, so he told his drivers that they should pay the tax. So he said, Adoni HaMelech, well, you have to pay tax, you're going to get all the tax. All the tax ends up in your pocket. So he said, no, I want to pay my tax to show all the other citizens that that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to pay tax. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, owns the whole world, Hashem HaRetz Yulai, everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's so bad if you steal a little money from someone else and you give it to the Beis HaMikdash as a carbon and you give it to a yeshiva? or you cheat on government programs and you give the money to yeshiva, to charity or something. So the Baruch Shem says, no, true, everything belongs to me, but still, I don't want you to steal. I'm not a true mitzvah. That's called a mitzvah b'avir. I live in Washington Heights, so there was a rabbi there who lived to a ripe old age, Rabbi Breuer Zechanel Racha. So he was known for his famous line, he didn't hold so much from the glatt kosher. He always used to stress that it's more important to be glatt yosher than to be glatt kosher. That if you're looking for midas chasidus, a person should look to be very honest in business. In fact, the Rambam stresses how important it is never to be an extremist in one direction or the other. A person should always go in the Shvil HaZahav to be moderate all the time. But the Rambam says if a person lives in a society which is corrupt, then he has to be an extremist in the other direction. So if a person lives in the American society, or most societies all over the world, where there's so much corruption going on, there's so much gzeila going on, so we would recommend that the person should not just follow the letter of the law, not even just follow the spirit of the law. He should go a little bit lechumre, to be machma a little bit in the other direction, to go out of his way, to be misrachik very much from gezer. Person is not telling you the truth.
I don't know.
If you don't know, then you have to take the person's word for it. You're not obligated to check.
In Jewish law, I'm not obligated to go further.
No, unless it appears pretty clear that the person is fooling you. But if it doesn't, if you don't have a reason to suspect that the person is a liar, then you're not obligated to suspect. Oh, the American law does require it. Okay. The law requires it, there's nothing to discuss. Okay. I just wanted to close by mentioning some of the laws of ribis. The laws of ribis are very, very complicated. Ribis, charging interest. This is a very big problem that a lot of companies get involved in. One company loans money to another. Sometimes you have a company where the whole business is that they lend money, and they charge interest. That's clearly prohibited for a Jewish firm to lend money to another Jew. Is prohibited. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a heter. If the one who's borrowing the money is a corporation, if it's not a private individual who's accepting a personal obligation, personal liability for this loan, if it's a corporation and no one is co-signing. If you have a corporation and the president of the corporation co-signs, that's what's commonly done for legal purposes, so then Vita, if he co-signs, so then he's accepting upon himself a personal obligation. But if no person co-signs, just the corporation is borrowing money and there's no shibud haguf, what we call, there's no individual who's mukhir, so Moshe Feinstein has a chiddush that there's no prohibition of ribis at all in such a situation. But let's say it's a case where the money is being loaned from a Jewish person or a Jewish corporation to a Jewish individual person. So then there are laws of ribis. One is not permitted to charge interest. Even if a person did charge interest, Allah says that you have to give back that interest, even many years later. Once a person realizes that he did not really charge ribis, so the Allah requires, it's one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, the chayach rechimah, he has to give back that ribis. This din that you have to pay back the ribis, and it's even enforceable in Bezdin, if you go to the Torah, the Bezdin will force you to pay back the interest. This only applies if the violation was a biblical issur of ribis. If it was only avak ribis midirabbanan, which is many times the case, most of the cases are not ribis deraisa, many cases are only ribis derabbanan, so then the courts will not, the bezin will not enforce, bezin will not force you to give back the ribis, but still the Shulchan Aruch says, the bedinei shemayim, b'volot tzedei shemayim, the proper thing is the person should still give back the ribis. This is a big issue that... Many poskim hold that if everything is done by check, it's only ribis derabbanan. So most of the loans, what? Also derabbanan, right? A heteriska is only meaningful if the people really understand what they're agreeing to.
So what happens if you entered into a contract, a mortgage, let's say, or a loan agreement? I've seen it done many years ago. Somebody tried to do it for Washington Heights, somebody tried to do it. In a margin agreement. I don't know whether they succeeded, but you entered into the agreement. Black and white.
You enter into the agreement that it's based on a heteriska.
Yeah.
Okay. But if both parties understand what heteriska means, heteriska means that it's not that you're lending me the money and I'm to be held responsible for the money. You're giving me the money and I'm investing the money for you.
Joint
venture. And if the venture goes down the drain, so then you lose your part. You lose your part. So if you realize that you can lose a lot of money over here, if those are the facts and you realize, they both realize you can lose money, then it's a heteriska, then it's legitimate, right? Then it's Shulchan Aruch. Means that the parties have to realize that there's a possibility that the one who's giving the money may lose a big chunk of his money, half of his money.
Some industries, I mean, I would practice more for discounts than for payment in 30 days. Is there any validity to the idea that if you're paying for example in 90 days and just paying net, but say, well, if you're demanding net, in other words, I'm paying 2% more than someone else, then that's considered different.
You're right, the Chochma Sodom says that. Chochmas Sodom says that's Ribbis Midirabbanon. The Gemara has many cases of Ribbis Midirabbanon. For example, this is a common practice. Let's say I buy something on installments, and they have two prices. They say, if you buy it right, if I buy a television, I pay today, it's $300. And if I pay on installments over the course of a year, it'll be $350 or $400 or something. You buy it on a wheel on installments, and if you pay it out later, at a later date, then it costs more. So that's a violation of Ribbis Midirabbanon. And the Gemara has another violation of Ribbis Midirabbanon, is also commonly violated. Let's say I'm going to sell some merchandise which I didn't manufacture yet, and I need a lot of capital in order to manufacture this merchandise. So I tell the people, whoever pays in advance gets it for less. And whoever gets a discount, whoever pays for it later, has to pay more. So the halacha says that the correct price is the price that I charge for the people who are going to buy it after it will be delivered to them. That's the only time you're mechuyev. So let's say if I make up in advance, I'm going to publish a book. So they have a pre-publication. They all have like that. You have a pre-publication price, and then they have a regular price. If you pay later, it's going to cost $500. Whoever pays in advance, it'll be $450. Let's say I have a camp. So I say whoever pays for the camp in advance, it'll be $450. Whoever waits till the summertime, and then when the kids are there, then they pay, it'll be $500. So the Gemara says that's a violation of Ribbis Midirabbanon. Why is that Ribbis Midirabbanon? Because since you give me $400 in advance and I didn't give you anything, so we consider that $400 as if that were a loan. And later on I pay you back $450 worth of merchandise or $450 worth of service because of the fact that you gave me $400 months in advance. That's a regular loan, and that's an Issur Ribbis Midirabbanon. Min HaTorah, biblically speaking, there's no violation of Ribbis, because the money was paid for purchasing an object or for services that are going to be rendered. But Midrabbanon, since the money was paid before the services began to be rendered, or before the thing was even manufactured, so that's a violation of Ribbis Midrabbanon. Yeah, that's a big problem. That's a big problem. People have to keep this in mind.
But that applies also when you buy wholesale, if you buy for less.
No, wholesale retail, that's a different thing. I have a price. If you buy more, so then I sell it at a lower rate. No, but that's not because of Hamtonas Hazman. That's not because I wait to get something later, so therefore I pay you interest. So here the Chochmas Sodom has your point. He says if I deliver merchandise to the customer, and I give him a bill for $100, and I write in tiny letters on the bottom that if you pay within 5 days, I give you a 5% discount. So then the Chochmas Sodom claims what you're saying in effect is that the price really is $95. Not that it's $100, you're giving him a 5% discount if he pays within 5 days. It means the price really is $95. And if you pay later on installment, it means if you pay after 5 days, then I'm going to charge you more. I'm going to charge you $100. Because the halacha always says the correct price is the amount that it costs at the time that it's delivered. So that's the chumrah of the Chochmas Sodom that he writes in his sefer, that you're not permitted to give a discount if the person is going to pay in an earlier time. The later pasuk can point out that if the deal of the machusta, if the law of the land has it, that you're not, when is the customer obligated to pay for merchandise that's delivered?
30 days.
Oh, so if the law says you have up until 30 days to pay, then the correct price is the rate that he has to pay in 30 days. So then you say that then the halacha says it's a discount. Then I say the real price is $100, and if you pay within 5 days, then it's called a discount. He's paying, giving him a break that he pays $5 less. But if the din of the machusa has it, that he's held responsible the minute I deliver, I can bring him to court and insist that I want him to pay right now. If the din of the machusa is such, then the correct price is the $95. Whatever the price is, if he pays immediately, when he's mechuyev to pay, that's called the correct price. Should do is he should borrow money from the bank and let him tell him, you borrow money from the bank and you pay interest. Why should I borrow money from my bank and I'll pay interest? Tell him he should borrow and he'll pay the interest. That'll be his problem. There are problems of ribbis, right? In business, there are big problems, especially for lawyers or for secretaries in law firms. So the Gemara says clearly, the Mishnah says in the Ezel Neshech, that the violation of ribbis doesn't only apply to the malva and to the lova. In the situation where they're both Jewish, if one of them is a non-Jew, there's no problem. But if they're both Jewish, then there's a violation of ribbis. The Gemara says the violation even applies to the witnesses who sign on the document, or to the notary public who's going to notarize it, or to the lawyer who prepares the papers, or to the secretaries who type up the papers. They're all in violation of these laws of ribbis. There are certain situations where there would be a heter, but then you would have to ask specific shaylos. You have to have, in certain cases, these things are mutter. Yeah. To a non-Jew? No, there's no problem. No. Only if the both parties are Jewish. Whenever one of the two parties is not Jewish, there's no violation of ribbis at all.
You said you have to calculate the cost of delivery and present. What if the cost of delivery in 3 months is really
what?
The cost of delivery in 3 months is really your cost. That's the term that the customer wants. And you have borrowed money for 3 months forward in order to deliver.
I'm delivering today.
You're delivering today, but the customer wants to pay you in 3 months. And it's costing you 3 months worth of money from the bank in order to make that business. Your actual cost is for 3 months forward. And if you charge them, not interest, well, you need interest, but if we're charging him an extra 2% for your cost of money, that's your cost of delivering it now.
I'm charging more because I deliver it today. That's okay.
If you have that money now, you put it in the bank in 3 months, you earn so much and so much.
Yeah.
That's the question.
But in order to conduct business now, you have to give him terms which would include you borrowing yourself for 2 months forward. Why can you not charge that amount? That's your cost for delivery today.
You can. I think you can. I don't think that's the problem of business.
That's what the lady asked before.
I thought she asked a different question. I thought she asked if someone owes me money and because they don't pay, I have to borrow money from the bank. Okay, you have to ask each child individually. Each child has to be asked individually with all of the details. The Navi in Yeshaya says, "Tzion b'mishpatipadeh v'shaveho b'tzdoka," that the gulo hasida will be hastened, will be brought about when the Jewish nation fulfills certain specific mitzvahs. Kashrus is an important mitzvah, but kashrus is not one of the things that hastens the geula. And kriyas haTorah is also not, going to shul is also not. One of the key mitzvahs that hastens geula is Shabbos, the Navi says. There are certain specific mitzvahs, and one of them is mishpat, honesty in business. When the Jewish people, worry about the gun some other time, when the Jewish people will straighten out their business affairs, and they will be honest, that the Navi promises that this will hasten the Yisrael Mashiach.